case for argument, in fact, last case for argument, Folker versus Outagamie County, Mr. Olson.
May it please the court. Richard Felker was required to go cold turkey methadone withdrawal in the Outagamie County Jail and as a result suffered a full-blown psychotic episode to the point that he thought he was in the wedding hotel and was there to get married. He didn't know who he was, where he was, what point in time it was. He had a full-blown psychosis, had to go to the mental hospital. His case was dismissed on summary judgment, and that decision should be reversed for three main reasons. First, this court should hold that the probable onset of withdrawal symptoms from narcotics is a serious medical need, and that jail and prison personnel are not entitled to wait for the onset of an inevitable medical crisis before taking some action. If they can see it coming, they have to act to prevent it. Second, this court should hold, as did the district court, that psychosis is a serious medical need that triggers the deliberate indifference standard. Richard Felker began having a full-blown psychotic episode on April 29th, and instead of doing anything about it, both remaining defendants, Schertz and Mandler, just left him in his cell, disoriented as to person, place, and time, defecating on the floor, not knowing that that it was happening.
Well, didn't they deal with it, but they just misjudged the seriousness of it?
Excuse me?
They dealt with him. I mean, they were aware of it, but they were, at least their notations and communications were that he wasn't having serious reaction. Now, they may misjudge it, but they didn't ignore it.
Well, I think that's where the district judge makes an error in terms of crediting the inferences that favor the defense rather than the plaintiff. Sure, the district judge says the worst we can say about Mr. Felker in the afternoon of April 29th is that he's having mild tremors, but then he's defecated all over himself in his cell. And can you say the worst thing you can say about him is mild tremors? I think a reasonable jury could infer that he was beginning to experience serious withdrawal symptoms when that defecation occurred, and they should have seen that. Go ahead.
We know that. I mean, now, at least, we know that he was, this is... But I guess the question is, how much should they have known? Is it just a negligence, or is it some deliberate indifference where there's that intentional disregard or whatever?
Certainly by the point at which he has disorientation as to person, place, and time, and doesn't know who he is or where he is, and can't control his bodily functions, he's having a serious medical need by the afternoon of April 29th, and instead of taking him to the hospital, they just let him sit in jail until May 1st. Finally, I think a reasonable jury could infer, and this court should hold a reasonable jury could infer, that deliberate indifference to a serious medical need doesn't have to be proven by direct evidence. You don't have to catch somebody on videotape saying, I see this guy's going nuts, but I'm just going to let him stew in his own juices because I want to punish him. The fact that you see him having that psychotic episode and walk away doing nothing is sufficient evidence to infer deliberate indifference. The district court, I think, leaned in the wrong direction in a couple of instances in this case. One is, I think, the district court minimized the seriousness of Mr. Felker's objectively observable symptoms at various points in time, up to where he began to have that psychotic episode. And the other thing is, I think the district court gave too much credit to the defendant's protestations of their own good faith when the district court on summary judgment should have been granting inferences and recognizing inferences that could have been drawn by a reasonable jury in favor of the plaintiff, one of those being that these people, Schertz and Mandler, saw a person with a serious medical need and did nothing for 2 days. They saw him on the 29th, and they left him through until the 1st when somebody else said, a person that thinks he's in the wedding hotel and is there to get married and can't control his bodily functions and doesn't know who he is has to go to the hospital and send him. Somebody else sent him on May 1st. At that point...
The wedding hotel, where is that?
That's on May 1st. That's a quotation...
And was that Mandler again or another?
No, that was the nurse that actually sent him. That's...
Okay, that's all right.
It's quoted in our brief at page 29. But the fact is he was having those same kind of symptoms that on the 29th. That's what's meant by disoriented as to person, place, and time.
What is the treatment for someone who is on methadone? You're trying to get off of heroin, so you're on methadone. And now you're in a jail situation. This isn't the first time that something like this has happened, I'm sure. What's the usual course of treatment? They get methadone when they're in the jail?
By the time he... Had it happened earlier, he would have been put back on methadone.
He's only in this jail for 4 days, and the serious medical need became apparent after between the second and third days. So, what's the proper response to anybody who's on methadone withdrawal? And apparently, he didn't get his methadone the day he self-reported to the jail, I believe, didn't he?
Right, he did.
He didn't get his methadone that day.
Brian Schertz on the 28th and 29th should have made arrangements for the methadone. All he did was note in his notes that the clinic hasn't called us. On the 28th, he said in his notes, I'm going to call again on the 29th. I'll check again on the 29th, and he never did. Had he acted at that time, the restoration of methadone would have probably been effective to stave off the psychosis that occurred later. Later, it was clear that he had to go to a mental hospital and be treated for that psychosis. Thank you. I'll yield to Mr. Ewald.
Okay,
at this
thank
point.
You, Mr. Ellison. Mr. Ewald?
Maybe you can answer that, what the jail policy is. How do you treat somebody who's on methadone maintenance and now they're in your jail?
Sure. As I understand the situation, what happens at the Outagamie County Jail is the procedure changed from time to time over the several years before Mr. Felker became incarcerated there. The procedure would be either to take the inmate to Valley Health Service. This inmate was receiving his methadone from Valley Health Service in Menasha, which is just a relatively short trip away from the jail. Or alternatively, arrangements had been made from time to time to have methadone brought from Valley Health Services to the inmate in the jail. And then on other occasions, relatives of the inmate could bring the methadone. But the key is that the methadone clinic wants to know who the methadone is going to because it's a federally controlled substance and that the person receiving it consumes it and it's not going somewhere else. So that would be the procedure. With that in mind, our position, of course, is that the district court in this case properly granted summary judgment based on two particular reasons.
Well, what I find troublesome is this note of Diane Mandler's quoted on pages 61, 62 of the brief, of the plaintiff's brief, that he's disoriented in time, place, and person, unaware of the mess he's created, Now, that sounds as if she knew that this guy was, you know, completely off his rocker.
Well, I beg to differ.
And if so, I would think being completely off your rocker is a serious medical problem requiring immediate action of some sort. I don't know what more is needed for deliberate indifference. You know that there's a substantial probability a person has a serious medical problem.
Well, my response is that that's not the whole note, Your Honor. She also indicates in her note
What's the rest of the note?
The rest of the note is that...
Note? Is the note in its entirety? In the
yes, it is. It's part of the appendix of Mr. Felker. If you'll
take it. It says here, Supplemental Appendix 55. Is that right?
It's also quoted in full at Mr. Uwald's brief, page 4.
Yeah, it's page 55.
It's also at page... is at page 55. She sees him at 4:15 in the afternoon.
It was quoted in full.
Well, not quite, Your Honor, because she also says he denies any suicidal intent or ideation.
Yes, no, that's in the quotation.
What I'm suggesting, Your Honor, is that in order to fully understand Diane Mandler's state of mind at the time, she's recording not only that he's confused and disoriented times three and doesn't know where he is or what the time is and that he's made this mess, but she's also talking to him about his suicidal intent or ideation, and he denies any of that. He also says to her that...
I don't understand. I mean, that's like saying he denies he has a stomach ache. I don't get that. I mean, yes... I don't understand.
She's asking him more than just, do you know where you are? Do you understand?
I know, but if you don't know who you are, where you are, anything like that, and you don't know what you've just done, which we won't repeat because we're so refined, you know that you're dealing with a nut. And the fact that he doesn't have a stomach ache or hasn't broken his leg, I don't see what that has to do with it. I mean, imagine the... In fact, to say to a person who's obviously psychotic, oh, by the way, have you thought of committing suicide? That doesn't sound very sensible.
Well, I know that Mr. Felker.
Goofy.
I know that Mr. Felker maintains that he was psychotic at the time. There is no diagnosis and no medical opinion from any doctor that, in fact, he was.
But it's Mandler who says he is unaware of the mess that he has created in his cell. Now, that's a profound disconnection from reality. And she's saying that. She's an expert in crisis management, right?
Correct.
So she knows that she's dealing with someone who's psychotic, who's crazy, I mean, temporarily. And she doesn't do anything. That's very odd.
Well, Your Honor, I submit that what she did do was, after assessing him, conclude, based on her judgment at that time, that he was in no acute distress and that he would be
okay. Well, no acute distress, and there are suggestions of this in your brief and in the district court's opinion, that as long as a person isn't in physical pain, the fact that he's crazy doesn't count as, a medical condition.
Well, I'm not suggesting
you're
it's
not a happy lunatic. You think you're in the wedding hotel, so you're happy, about to get married, but you're completely nuts. Now, isn't a happy lunatic still a person with a serious medical problem?
No question about that, Your Honor. In terms of Monday morning, when he was complaining,
I'm not interested in that. I'm talking about, you know, the 29th. This is when this note was written.
Right, but he wasn't talking about being in a wedding hotel.
I understand that, but he doesn't know what he's just done in his cell. He doesn't know where he is, who he is, what have you. So that is just as nutty as the wedding hotel business. And it seems that because he isn't about to kill himself and is not in acute distress in the sense of being in pain, she thinks that he doesn't have a problem.
Well, I don't think that she thought he did not have a problem. She thought that in a monitored holding cell where he'd be under observation, that it was okay for him to remain there to see whether...
Without treatment.
Without any treatment. Correct,
right.
Your Honor.
Well, that's the critical thing, right?
No question.
What is crisis? It says that I recommend that he continue to be observed, and if any dangerous behaviors are noted, crisis doesn't capitalize or anything here. Should be contacted. Is that...
Meaning herself. She's the director or manager of the crisis intervention center, so that means contacting her again. Or somebody who's on call from that center.
That'd be contacting Mandler again?
Mandler, yes.
So Mandler's going to be contacted if things gets worse.
If his condition
worsens.
But
if the condition she observed now is not, doesn't merit meet
right.
The crisis.
That was her judgment at the time, Your Honor. She had to make a judgment call at that point, and that's the judgment she made. Now, in hindsight, that judgment probably was an error. But that's negligence. That's not an intentional, wanton, willful disregard of the inmate's well-being. She knows he's in a monitored holding cell. She's leaving instructions that if he gets worse, call her. And also, I think what has to be kept in mind is that Diane Mandler is a social worker. She's not a trained healthcare professional.
That's not.
But she did not.
She's in charge of crisis management. That means she is supposed to be able to figure out. Look, she, as Judge Mannion's question brought out, if he gets worse, they're not supposed to call a psychiatrist. They're supposed to call her. So she is claiming to have the competence to deal with this person's condition.
But there's no evidence that she appreciates at that point that this is a situation that demands him being transferred to a hospital for further care. I think that's the key point, that there's no evidence in this case, as the record now stands, that she is aware that he has a substantial risk of further harm if he remains in the jail. The question becomes then, should he be transferred to a hospital where he could receive care that would avoid a substantial risk? But there's no evidence in this record, and that's what the district court pointed out, that there was a substantial risk of actual harm to him by remaining there.
What do you mean by actual harm?
That he would have any ongoing psychotic effect, or that he would deteriorate to a point where it could be life-threatening to him, or that he would undergo any significant pain or discomfort in the process. As a matter of fact, there's no real evidence as to what are the symptoms of a methadone withdrawal, other than the testimony of one of the other nurses, Paul Mintzloff, who said that it would be an uncomfortable experience, but certainly not life-threatening. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Ewald. Mr. Olson, how much time does he have? 2 minutes?
One point in rebuttal. To allow a human being to continue in a mental state where they don't know who they are, where they are, or that they have defecated all over their cells, or when in time they are existing, is ongoing harm. It is a harmful situation on a moment-by-moment basis, not a situation that you sit and wait and say is something even worse than this going to happen. This is an important case for two big reasons. We have more and more mentally ill people in jails and prisons around the country, and we have more and more people who are dependent in one way or another on some kind of ongoing drug regimen. I think this is a case where the wrong opinion could send a very bad message, and I would very much hope that we don't find ourselves in a place where the courts are telling jailers that it's okay to let somebody sit in a cell and experience a psychotic episode by themselves. for a couple of days while nobody's attending to them. Thank you.
Just for you, what happens when you get to the hospital here? How do they stabilize? Just give methadone?
More closely observed, and if you can be given calming medications, they're given to you.
I assume the record doesn't tell us here what happened after the hospital. This case is only concerned with what happened in the four-day period in the jail, the 2 days after the seriousness of his condition was apparent.
Well, we aren't complaining at all about what happened after he was taken out of the jail, but those medical records from the hospitals that he was transferred to and back and forth in are in the record.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Both counsel. And court will be in recess until 9:30 tomorrow.